Alan Cawley is with me in the studio. Alan, you're very welcome.
Good evening, Hugh.
Well, I haven't seen you since the old World Cup final. Your thoughts on Argentina's
I've still
defeat?
Been in mourning, so I have you.
Yeah. Look, I know you fancied Argentina from the outset, but I mean, overall, we have fair winners in Germany.
Of course we have fair winners, Hugh. Yeah, very worthy winners. Germany, as we know, an excellent side as well. Obviously, I had hoped that Argentina would win. I was a bit disappointed with them in the tournament, I have to be honest. But in saying that, after them getting to the final, I did think they were in with a good shout. They played very well, I thought, on Sunday. And they had their chances. They've only themselves to blame, really. They missed two or three unbelievable chances. When you consider it's a World Cup final, to get chances as good as Higuain had, and even Messi, they'll be kicking themselves, all right. But in saying that, when Germany's opportunity came, Götze finished it very well. And, of course, they're worthy winners.
It was a worry how tired and just completely spent Leo Messi looked out there. And people are maybe giving him a tough time, which I can understand. He got the player of the tournament and people are giving out about this. They're saying it was a marketing that, you know, his ties with Adidas and their link with FIFA and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I mean, if you're so reliant on one person to get you there and he fails to perform, you can't blame him.
Of course you can't, yeah. I think people have been far too quick to judge all this Messi bashing. I'm not for it at all. For me, he's still the greatest player in the world. He's the best player I've ever seen, and he definitely is in the bracket of Maradona and Pele. Like this nonsense that had the one on Sunday, that would have put him in the bracket. He is in the bracket, 100%. What he's doing at club level, the goals and the statistics, everything backs it up. The Messi bashing that's going on at the moment, I'm totally against it.
I don't understand how people can suggest his legacy will be determined by whether or not he's won a World Cup. I mean, there are some horrifically awful players who've won World Cups. Equally, there are some brilliant players that have never done it. And I think he has proven season after season, time and time again, international standard and club standard, that he is one of the greatest ever played.
Of course he has, yeah. And that's the thing, Hugh. Like, if you're even just looking at the evidence of the game on Sunday, he had a poor game by his standards, which are so high. So does that mean to say if Higuain had to take that chance and Argentina won 1-0, because even though he had a bad game, does that put him in the bracket then? People saying he's now he's in Maradona and Pele's bracket, even though he had a bad game. So like, to suggest then had he scored or had he carried them all the way and won the trophy, that would put him in the bracket too. It's a nonsense argument, I think, you know. He was brilliant in the tournament. He carried them the first four or five games. Fair enough, he didn't play as well in the. But this is a player that missed out on 3 months of the season. He still scored something like 46 goals this season. Ludicrous stuff. And people are saying he's had a bad season. He also, you have to remember, in the first three or four games, Hugh, when Aguero was obviously injured, Lovetzi didn't fire, Higuain didn't fire, Di Maria wasn't great. So he carried the whole attack and threat that Argentina had on his own. He scored the goals that got them into the knockout stages. He also had the burden on his shoulders of all this pressure of not only trying to emulate Maradona but also trying to carry the team as far as he could. So of course at some point that was going to catch up on him, and that's obviously what happened physically and mentally alone. He just looked absolutely out on his feet. So, and people are suggesting this nonsense that even they're showing pictures I've seen of a team talk and he's looking away and all, like lunacy stuff. The best role model that we've had in the game in how many years. People should be embracing that we've been around to witness this fella, and I certainly am, and you won't hear me bashing him anyway.
No, and rightly so. Dominic McGuinness is on the line, Manchester based football writer and regular on the show. You're very welcome, Dominic.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, well, just I'll ask you first of all your opinion on Lionel Messi. Is he being judged too harshly for what was a huge amount of pressure to put on the shoulders of one guy at the World Cup?
Yeah, I think he is. I think I'd agree with Alan, really, on the most part. I think what he's done at club level and over the years, it proves what a player he is. I think it's very hard to match the achievements of Maradona. And I think Maradona does stand above the rest, simply because of the fact that he managed to do what he did at places like Napoli for 3 years and completely transform them, as well as winning a World Cup with his national side. So I think that Maradona is possibly one player that you would put above those players, but Messi certainly sits in the rung below, if you like. And I think that it is a bit harsh, but when things don't go your way and you can't quite carry a team on your own, which, you know, that's what Argentinian fans and lots of punters like us were looking at. Can Messi actually carry the side in the final? But, you know, obviously there are other Argentinian players that shone, you know, more brightly than him. He won the Golden Ball, of course. I don't think many would think that he was the best player in the tournament, but that's another matter. But yeah, overall, he's been judged harshly. And I think that, you know, these things do get forgotten. I mean, you only have to go back to 2006. Remember Zinedine Zidane putting the head into Materazzi, and, you know, he was public enemy number one, but now he's still remembered as one of the best players of his generation. So these things do tend to blow over.
In terms of the eye-catching story of the last couple of days since the World Cup has gone away, it has to have been from a business point of view, a lot of raised eyebrows that Adidas have signed such a huge commitment to Manchester United, given the fact that they won't be in the Champions League next season. €1 billion over 10 years, £750 million, Dominic. You know, no Champions League football is no barrier to big money sponsorship deals at Old Trafford, it seems.
No, it's a long-term one, obviously. The numbers are mind-boggling for the reasons that you just suggested in terms of no Champions League football, but they're quite confident that they're going to do the numbers and then they're going to get more than $1.5 billion in sterling alone. Very shortly, they're going to get so much of the investment back. So when you think of it, though, when you do think of 750 over 10 years in terms of sterling, now that, you know, that's $40 million less than the Glazers bought the club in 2005. So it puts into some context. And yeah, the figures are incredible. I mean, obviously, Nike just didn't want to know at the end of it in terms of the numbers. They didn't think that it was fair to their shareholders to go as big as Manchester United want to. But I think one thing that you can say about United, despite the failure on the pitch last season, is that they're still a huge commercial animal. And despite that lack of Champions League exposure globally, they're an incredible brand. And you know, again, you look at the numbers in terms of all the commercial deals that they've been doing, the fact that they can pay Wayne Rooney $300,000 a week, the fact that Chevrolet will pay them £53 million a year just to have the name on the front of the shirt. They've got the Aon training complex. That's a huge sponsorship deal. They've got many more like that. It's every week you get a press release of Manchester United announcing another sponsorship deal with somebody in some part of the world where United will be their key sponsor. So, you know, despite the fact that right on the doorstep, Manchester City, the champions of England, we know what they've been doing in terms of on the pitch and their acquirement of top players, but still Manchester United are ahead of them globally in that commercial sense.
There is a caveat there though, Dominic, that, you know, obviously last season, I think United have been able to persuade Adidas and whoever else that it was a bit of a glitch in the majors, if you like, but you know, equally, they haven't bought into that kind of a contract to see them outside the top four, or outside the top three or even two in English Premier League on a long-term basis. So there's pressure on United, there's pressure on Van Gaal and the players now to get them right back up to justify these kind of figures.
There is, but there's a massive sense of optimism about Manchester that you wouldn't have sensed or you wouldn't have believed could happen just a few months ago for obvious reasons. I mean, this fellow that's coming in now, who's just, you know, within a whisker of a World Cup final, going out on penalties, and, you know, he's got the CV that no manager can really compete with now, with Ajax, Barca, Bayern, AZ in Holland. He won titles at all those places, had a couple of stints at Barca, a couple of stints with the Dutch national side. You know, two players have come into United as well. I expect more, Shaw and Herrera. Obviously, Vidic, Ferdinand, they're gone, but I'm quite convinced there'll be a couple more signings, possibly Vidal. But what's interesting as well is that, you know, Van Gaal would have given a complete sense of confidence to everybody, and that goes for the commercial sector of the club. And again, you know, this financial fair play is very interesting, because that sponsorship deal with Adidas, you know, that's pretty much money in the bank for players now, because that's money that they've brought in. So there's a huge chunk of that now that Manchester United can use for players. You know, it's a very, very clever deal, and it's one that obviously over the road they'll be looking at, because this is how, you know, you get around some of these issues, and that's what's going to make it, you know, Manchester United is still an attractive proposition. Another poor season, which I wouldn't expect, and I don't think many do, and then that would put a different slant on it. But it just shows you can have one bad year and it all changes, and it looks now like everything can be positive ahead of the US tour, which they're about to embark on.
Yeah, and I'm sure Manchester City are looking across going, yeah, I mean, we'd like to be able to do that. Chelsea may be the same, but this is a reputation that United have built up, and a business that they built up over, it's not just the last couple of seasons, it's 12, 14 years in the making. It's going to take Chelsea and Manchester City time and continued success if they want to even knock on the door of that kind of buying power, if you like.
Absolutely, and you know, Chelsea have their own ambitions. They've got obviously a very wealthy owner, and they've been doing good things over the years, of course, but their successful history is recent. Manchester City, likewise, obviously a very strong side going back 40 years. But now, of course, they're the champions. They're the best team in England. And that's just a fact. They're buying players. They'll still keep buying players. They've quietly gone about their business this transfer window in terms of Fernando and Sanyu coming in. I would expect Mangala and possibly even Benatia to come in as well. And, you know, they will continue to buy players. They'll offload players as well for those FFP reasons. And they will be mindful, of course, as well about the the Champions League homegrown situation. They've got to be very mindful of that. But, you know, they know what they're doing. It's an incredibly well set up club. They have people that know all about this kind of business. The Barca pair, if you like, of Serrano and Begiristan, who again have come to work in Manchester and have really set about the task superbly well. And Manchester City are going nowhere. The regeneration alone of East Manchester that they have put into place is incredible. They're tying up with the City Council, the universities. They've got plans. They're building sixth form colleges. You know, all sorts of things are going on in their neck of the woods in that part of East Manchester. So it's a huge, huge project. And obviously, it's going to take them time to try and chip away at Manchester United's global dominance. But, you know, they feel that they have the people in place to do that.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, really, when you think about it. I was even looking at today, I think 55,000 season tickets at Old Trafford gone already. So the fans have committed themselves. They've bought into Louis van Gaal, if you like, and they think that there can be success going on. In terms of the squad, you've touched on some players there, the likes of Vidal possibly coming in. There was rumours that Hummels from Germany, they're looking at him. Is there any standout names that you think, United are investing for next season?
Well, yeah, I do think there'll be a couple more signings. I think there'll be a centre-back coming in. I mean, obviously, you mentioned Hummels, you mentioned Vidal. I think that, you know, obviously a midfielder like Vidal is one that's been missing for a long time. You look at so many players now, but I think that one of the key issues for United will be, well, you know, who is Van Gaal going to want to keep hold of until the end of this window? Because, you know, again, really, he'll be looking at one or two top names, top targets, but really, who is a part of that squad now, this huge squad that he wants to keep? And interestingly, local polls in the local paper, you know, most United fans want Nani, Cleverley, Fellaini, Young, even Fletcher, who's been a fantastic servant, and the likes of Bebe, of course, who's not really been around for a while. You know, many are thinking, you know, their time has come, they've got to go, it's got to be a fresh start. And this fella, who obviously won't have any problem personality wise in terms of thinking he's up for the task, he'll have that Dutch arrogance where he'll walk into Old Trafford and think, you know, I've been all over the place, this isn't going to faze me, where, you know, it seemed to faze David Moyes. So, you know, if he wants to get rid of players, he will. And similarly over the road, Manchester City as well, if I'm concentrating obviously on my part, you know, again, City fans are thinking there might be a bit of a clear out there before some of the stellar names come in. You know, there's still players on the books like Sinclair and Rodwell, Garcia, Richards, that, you know, none of those really are going to get a sniff under this guy now, we reckon, for the new season. And what about the Yaya Toure conundrum? Of course, he's upset City fans on a couple of occasions recently with some outlandish comments via the agent, and it looks like really many have given up on him now.
I mean, listen, that's a whole other day's story, Yaya Toure, and what the hell has been coming out of his mouth over the last while, but we don't have time to get into it now. Very quickly, Ross Barkley today reports in the Manchester Evening News that he might be going to City. Is that a good move for Ross Barkley, do you think?
Well, I think it would. I mean, you know, there's been, if you look at some of the homegrown domestic players, though, that have moved to Manchester City, I've just mentioned two of them, when you think of Sinclair and Rodwell, and that has all gone horrendously badly for two really promising young players. I mean, Rodwell's been incredibly unfortunate with injury. Sinclair just didn't seem up for the challenge, really. He just didn't seem to have the confidence to step into that side. Rodwell has been very, very unfortunate, but that's what can happen, and that is the dilemma that you have for a young player like Barkley. But is he the kind that thinks, well, no, you know, injury-wise, I've been fine. I'm obviously an England international. I'm confident. I can get in that side, and I've got a role to play. And because the likes of a Yaya Toure situation is so grey at the moment, then, yeah, that could well be the kind of move that City go for. I mean, you know, there are other names that they've been linked with as well. The former United man, Paul Pogba, who has been linked with a move to Manchester City. And that's the kind of midfielder, again, that they might like the look of.
OK, listen, out of time, but thanks very much for your time, Dominic. Appreciate
Cheers
it.
You.
Dominic McGuinness there. Yeah, we'll get your thoughts in a second. We'll take a quick break.
Cheers now.